So this evening, I'll talk about the fourth of the five faculties, which in English is usually translated as concentration. So the five faculties are faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. And I hope this talk is useful for you. Certainly my intention in giving it is to try to convey something that you could use on the retreat or in your life. But I think it's going to be a little bit of a different kind of talk. But you know, when you do this practice here, call on us to step into a little different kind of life than we usually live, or a very different life. I mean, otherwise, why bother? It does require something of us, a new way of seeing, new way of thinking, new way of being, perhaps. So I'll begin by saying that I'm going to avoid using the word concentration for a talk on concentration. Instead, I'm going to use the Pali Sanskrit word samadhi. I feel, for me, the word samadhi is a heart word, word of the heart. Concentration is kind of it doesn't have the same richness to it. In fact, my sense in the Indian context, in Indian religions, the word samadhi is a very powerful word. Some religions more powerful than how it's used in Buddhism. And it's a word which drips in association with the sacred. It's talking about what is the most sacred. And as I was thinking about samadhi in preparation for this talk, I was thinking that perhaps we can say that mindfulness is prose and samadhi is poetry. And that certainly my associations with samadhi are a place, a way of being, a place in the heart or in the mind, in the body, the kind of creativity or intuition or flow or the emergence, the muse that emerges, that appears. I associate that with samadhi much more than I do with mindfulness. Mindfulness I think of as honesty about what is, radical honesty about what's happening. And samadhi is one way of, at the moment I'm thinking of it, is it's tenderness with what is. So, you know, to be kind of tenderness or softness, openness to what is. And then times when I've been very closely kind of dwelling in places that resemble samadhi, close to samadhi, it seems to have been a place where certainly creativity flows more easily for me. Poetry and drawing, sculpture are some of the things that I started doing when I started doing a lot of meditation and started to feel the tenderness that can happen, or this wellspring of the, I guess in the West we call it the muse, because we don't take credit for where our creativity comes from. It comes from someplace, you know. I don't think we believe there's a muse somewhere up there, but we don't take so much credit for it. We feel like it comes from something within us that is not us, not our self-conscious us. And it's often very satisfying to have something swell up that has certain power and intelligence that we don't associate it with directly with me, myself, and mine. We're not measuring it against our identity or taking it personally. So these five faculties, I'd like to offer a little analogy for them and how they, you know, really to appreciate them and let them become stronger in our lives. It's a very, very different way than how we usually live. Remember, Dharma is like living differently. It requires something a different way. And so so the analogy here is that I use sometimes of you're having a nice day. You've had a nice walk in the oak woodlands, perhaps, and you've come to the river and you sit down and have a nice lunch underneath an oak tree. Maybe you're back against the oak tree looking at the river going by and you're very content. You finish eating just enough. You're very satisfied and maybe you even take a little nap and you wake up so refreshed and so content and everything just seems so right. And you're watching the river. And then you notice there's a boat coming down the river. It's a grand New Orleans showboat with lights flashing and bands playing and casinos alluring. And the next thing you know, you're on the boat. But not the next thing you know, but it took about 2 or 3 days to realize you were on the boat. And what happened? You were like so content and happy, everything was perfect, and now you're losing money and exhausted, and so you slowly kind of figure out a way to get off the boat. It takes a while, it takes a few years, but you get off. And then you slowly make your way back up to the river and you find your place there, your wonderful tree, and you find, oh, this is so good to be back here. But lo and behold, there's another boat coming down the river. And it's a, this time it's a war boat, fighting the ultimate war, the great war, righting all the injustices in the world. And the great cause. You're not sure what the cause is, but it's, you know, but you're on the boat. You find, you get on that boat, you know, to fight the great war. And it takes you months before you realize you're even on the boat, even months more to get off. And then you kind of find your way slowly, make your way back up river to that wonderful little oak tree. And then the next boat that comes down is a really decrepit little raft. It's barely floating. It's so poor and so you have so much pity for it. And and you're on that boat. Oh, poor me. My boats are so poor. I'm going to drown. This is horrible. It's so hard. What are you doing on the boat? You were in the river, right? You're in the riverbank, on safe, dry ground. So you make it back one more time, and you're there, and maybe now you don't just lean against a tree, but you kind of sit up straight a little bit, so you're a little bit more attentive and alert. And sure enough, the boats come down the river. But now you see it as a boat. Oh, that's a boat. I'm here. I'm content and peaceful. I'm on solid ground. There's no need to get on the boat. You wave as it goes by. So the five faculties can be seen as the dry ground. If you're standing or basing yourself in the five faculties, then it's a lot easier not to get swept up in all the different boats that go through your mind, all the different thought trains, thought boats that come along. The alluring ones of great pleasures, the alluring ones of great resentments and conflicts, the alluring ones of for me, whatever it might be, we get pulled into. There's probably one boat that is just like, you know, the Donald Trump Hotel, but it has your name all over. And that's like the hardest one to stay off, you know, it's just like your name's like blasted in color and lights and, you know, neon, and there's probably an airplane with a banner flying over and your name on it. It must be a really, really interesting boat. And so you tend to want to go on that boat, right, of course. But the five faculties are a place of safety, of dry ground, solid ground, where you don't get swept away. So when the kind of confidence and faith in the practice and being present is strong, when we're kind of alive with certain kind of energy, vitality, and we feel like we're here, solidly here, like we plant our feet, metaphorically maybe, you know, both feet solidly on the ground, and we're really kind of have a certain amount of energy in being rooted or being present, being attentive. We apply ourselves to some degree. We don't. And then we are mindful. We see clearly and honestly what's here. And the honesty is, I think, really important. And then we have samadhi, degree of samadhi, and then there's wisdom. And if we have those become strong, and we identify with those, we see those are our home. Those are our place. You know, that's maybe more who we are, who we can be, than the usual boats, the identities. Then we can stand on dry ground and we can, you know, decide which boats to get on. Some boats are nice to get on. Some boats maybe are useful to get on, be part of. But we have a lot much more ability to choose and to see and to understand because we're holding our ground. We're standing for ourselves. We're kind of strong. We're kind of, we are, you know, a little bit more of an agent and kind of a little bit in control or in charge of our life than we would if we're not, if we're in the river, kind of just being swept away by the current. And this is what the Dharma kind of asks us to do, is to switch from believing in the boats, believing every thought we have, identifying with all the currents that go on, investing ourselves, our identity with them all, and believing in something more than those, believing in something which is very personal or very close in or right here, where we're not, you know, seduced or preoccupied by what's kind of way beyond ourselves in the world of the past or the world of the future or the fantasy. We don't believe in, we don't invest. We don't put all our investments. You know, they say it's not good to put all your life savings into one stock. You know, you should diversify. So, but you don't buy stocks in, people who are building housing developments on the moon either. You know, you want to invest where it really can work. And so, we don't want to invest in fantasy, put a lot of our energy into it and hope and expectation. Some people invest a lot in the past, reviewing it and trying to have a better past by reviewing it enough, or invest a lot in planning the future. But there's a here, right here. Today, this day. And then not just this day, but even in this day, there can be projections, there can be idealizations, there can be all kinds of delusion about what we see and how we relate. Well, one of the ones that I lived under, that only through my Buddhist practice that really got a handle on it, was I was very invested in having everybody like me. And I can tell you that's exhausting. And it's only when I started living in the monastery and I was doing a lot of practice that I saw how painful it was to always be negotiating and trying to get everyone to like me. I was living out there. It was like my happiness was out there, dependent on everyone. My happiness depended on everyone else behaving, which is not a good strategy. And so I learned to kind of divest myself from that concern. And samadhi is one of the places to discover a sense of happiness and well-being that is not dependent on the world behaving a certain way or people behaving a certain way. The five faculties are away, coming back to those. So recognizing this is the kind of radical change that the Dharma is asking us to do. And that is, it's not a rejection per se of anything, but kind of a shift to dry ground. And stand on dry ground, and then we can take care of the life we live in a more direct way. We can maybe be in a better position to admit what needs to be admitted. We're in a better position to amend what needs to be amended. We're in a better position to love what should be loved. Better position to care for what should be cared for. But we're not going to be swept away by it and go down the river with it. So samadhi is one of these five faculties. And I associate samadhi not with the word English word concentration, but with the English word composure. And because the English word concentration, in my mind, it lends itself to kind of the idea of a narrow focus, kind of like you're supposed to be in the control tower looking at something and boring down. You know, it's kind of like a mental act of seeing something. And I found that, for me, that it's an embodied experience of being composed on whatever is there. So if I'm going to have a samadhi, concentration on my breathing, it's not a matter of looking at it, but a matter of composing myself, settling myself, my whole being, onto the breathing experience. And part of that is observation. Part of that might be looking at it and focusing on it. But it's a much more embodied, it's a holistic experience, samadhi. So it brings together the variety of faculties we have. It's a bringing together. And so to have samadhi with breathing, I do something I do also with my body. If someone says, compose yourself, I think some people, if they would kind of like take a deep breath and sit up and kind of get balanced and aligned as they sit here. Because we compose ourselves almost physically. So to compose yourself from the breath, kind of settle yourself physically around the breath. There's, you know, let the breath become like, be cradled by the experience of breathing, be cradled by the torso, by the diaphragm, by the rib cage, by the belly. You know, maybe even adjust the posture so that the posture kind of is one that feels, you know, like it can be composed and settled and balanced. And then also we compose ourselves with our minds. And it's I think that for me, composing is a settling and spreading out and having a good basis and being balanced. Whereas, you know, a single-minded focus is, you know, is maybe more wobbly. It's not, that doesn't include everything. So to settle the mind. So I was maybe fortunate when I first came to Thailand to practice. I was taught that samadhi has a lot to do with letting go, and less to do with doing than it more to do with letting go. So the idea that you get out of the way, you kind of relax and let go of distractions, let go of trying to do a lot. And so I was saved from what can be a lot of work of trying to put heroic effort into trying to get concentrated. Making some effort is useful, but samadhi has a lot to do with this allowing, this relaxing, this opening up. And the times when samadhi arises for me, emerges, I never have the sense that I made it happen, that I caused it, that I'm in charge of it. It always feels like a gift to me. I have my role to play. Brian talked about having conditions or creating influences to support things. And so I can create the conditions for samadhi, but I can't make myself have samadhi, a state. And that's one of the reasons I like the word, to use the word samadhi, is that samadhi is understood to be a state, whereas concentration is more like a single mental activity. So it's a whole, associated with kind of a way of being, almost. So, to be composed. So if you find yourself, you know, wandering off in thought, and you know, you keep coming back to the breath or something, and just you wander off easily, you might experiment with, rather than focusing your attention on the breath, you might experiment with relaxing and composing yourself on the breath. And one of the functions of, one of the aspects of samadhi, that goes back to the time of the Buddha, is the referring to it as a form of unification. And so it's unifying, it's gathering together of all the disparate parts of ourselves. And often we're living fragmented, you know, with different thoughts going in many multiple thoughts kind of going on more or less at the same time, and emotions and feelings and all kinds of things happening. So for example, if I might come here to sit down in the hall, and my intention is to really stay present for my breathing. That's the intention. However, it's the sitting before lunch, and I'm hungry. And I'm wondering about what are they serving for lunch, and what's that smell? But then, just as I took off my shoes down there, I noticed that someone, I've been putting my shoes in the same shoe rack, in the same place, all retreat. It's my place. And someone put their shoes in my shoe rack spot. And how could they? And, you know, how thoughtless. And maybe I'll write to the president of IRC about telling people to, you know, be more, you know, considerate of, you know, people's chosen shoe spot. And so I have this resentment, and I'm thinking about the letter I'm going to write, I'm thinking about what's for lunch, and what's that smell, and I'm trying to get, how I'm supposed to get concentrated. And then also, I just got fired from work before I came on the retreat, and so, I'm all kind of, you know, still a little bit jittery, you know, a little bit like a fear, what's going to happen to me in my future, and what's happening after I leave here, what I go back to, and it's like all these things are kind of swirling around. And so we're kind of fragmented. We're kind of going off in different directions and different thoughts. And it's not an experience of being unified. And samadhi is like all of what we are is gathered together, cozy. Kind of come here, come here. You can say to yourself, come here. Come here, everybody. Let's be together. Let's huddle. Let's huddle here. And let's kind of like all be on the same team and work together. But lovingly, you can't force anything like this, but come invite everything and remind everything, we're here, come here. So that your intention, your emotions, your bodily sensations, your thoughts, everything is kind of gathered together for the same purpose at the same time, here. And so if you're staying with your breathing, composed on your breathing, you wouldn't be... if you're thinking, you might as well think about that. You know, if you can't stop thinking, start thinking about your breath. If you see if you can engage your emotions with the breathing. It might be hard initially, but there's something about, so any pleasure, any satisfying feelings or sensations that come with the sensations of breathing. And it might just be a minuscule one. Some people find that there's a little bit of... nice feeling as you exhale, smoothness and letting go. Maybe just going, some relief. Some people find that if there's ever so slight pause between the exhale and the inhale, there's something kind of peaceful and nice, something nice about that there. Some people find it so satisfying to breathe in, ah, you know, it worked or something. And, you know, just some people it's the rhythm. Some people it's more the in-breath, more the out-breath. It doesn't have to be dramatic. But somehow if you can tune into what's pleasant and enjoyable about breathing, then you begin gathering together your feelings, your feeling tones, you know. So they support you and they're engaged also as in the part of the process. Bring your body into the picture. You know, if you're only paying attention from the control tower in the head, then you're missing a huge part of the sensory apparatus that human beings have. And we have senses and nerve endings all over our body. And to soften and relax and feel the breath, feel the impact of the breathing on the torso and the body and the flow and the shifts and the changes. Not just the kind of direct sensations, you know, of the movement and all that, but it's kind of like a massage. And if we relax and receive that movement of the breathing through the torso, how is that received by the body? How does it spread out through your body a little bit, the effects of it? So then we begin to include our body and let the body be the receiver of this experience of breathing. Some people wonder about, you know, how is mindfulness or awareness different than thinking? And you know, sometimes you have this music that has this deep bass booming, you know, and it's a vibration, and you can certainly hear the booming, but you feel it in your, you know, those cars driving on the street, you know, and you kind of feel the vibration in your chest, you know, or in your body, and that feeling in your chest, you know, or in the body, that's not thinking about it, that's feeling it. So in that degree, can you tune into what's happening with the breathing? Part of what samadhi is stability. So to be stable, and part of the value of stability is that you can see more clearly if the mind is stable. It's like having a telescope. If you hold a telescope to look at the moon with your hands, you can't hold it still enough to really get a good view of the moon. But if you put it on a tripod, then you can see well. And so we create, you know, stability of the mind. And so partly what we're looking for in samadhi is to let the mind kind of become stable or a little bit still. So not jumping around so much. And of course the mind jumps around. But is it possible to have some stability even with that? Some kind of stepping back on dry land and not identifying so much with the jumping around mind, not being swept by it, not reacting to it, not being for or against it, but kind of stepping back and taking a stance on the dry land, so you kind of look and see, oh, that's there. I see that jumping mind. I'm here, standing here, upright, alert. I think it's a very grown-up thing to do, to stand on dry ground with the five faculties and be able to face life and see it honestly and directly without being swept away by it or pushed around by it. Stand here with this experience. Part of the role of samadhi is to help create clarity in the mind. And that's partly done by simplifying things, letting things become simpler in the mind. To have too many boats in there swimming around in your river, but kind of being willing to kind of let things go for the time being. That what happened yesterday maybe is not so important. What happened tomorrow? Many of the thoughts and ideas we have about ourselves are just more boats. And maybe a willingness to step away from a lot of the beliefs we have about ourselves, conclusions we have about ourselves, not to dismiss them or say they're wrong, but we don't have to be on those boats all the time. And so to be very forgiving of oneself and maybe compassionate or maybe generous to oneself. And if there's strong thoughts about lack of self-worth or the difficulties you have or the problems you feel you have, maybe take a really deep bow to them. I know you're there. I will try to deal with you respectfully and kindly. But for the time being, that's not what we're doing. And for the time being, I'm going to try to compose myself here and just simplify things and just be here for this stuff in the moment. The word samadhi and the kind of idea of concentration lends itself to the idea that of some kind of powerful, adamantine, single-minded focus that's kind of like, you know, superhuman. I was under that illusion when I first started Buddhism, kind of. And the kind of level of focus you need for developing and getting into samadhi is not that great. And I think that if the level of concentration, level of attention and focus you need to drive a car is probably adequate to get into some, you know, groove with samadhi. And but the challenge is, so you have the ability, but the challenge is that most of us are kind of, almost by instinct, motivated to pay attention when driving a car. The consequences are pretty serious if you don't. But you sit here and close your eyes, and you know, we can't somehow muster the, I don't know, we muster the motivation, but somehow it's not so compelling compared to how compelling some of the other things are that we can be thinking about, be involved in. And so it isn't like you don't have the ability to get focused and concentrated or on things. But partly it's that your mind, your system, has chosen to focus on something different than you want. So you're focusing on your taxes, or you're focusing on, you know, your resentment to your high school partner 50 years later. You're focusing on, you know, what are they going to serve for supper here at IRC? You know, and you're very concentrated on some of these things. You know, you're giving yourself over fully. So I say all this to suggest that we're not talking about something that's very foreign or something you don't already do. It's a matter not so much of developing a new skill as it is learning how to apply that skill in a useful way to something that's useful and supportive of you, someplace that's wholesome and supportive. And also I hope that all of you have some modicum of experience of having some samadhi, some state of being composed or settled or at peace. And one of the things that happened to me when I started doing a lot of meditation is, which often happens, especially people who are relatively new to meditation, is memories start coming that haven't been remembered for a long time. And some people feel, oh no, I'm not supposed to be thinking about the past, I'm failing as a meditator, I'm supposed to be in the present. But actually that releasing and freeing of old memories, unresolved issues, or letting them be processed is part of what needs to happen in this whole deepening of practice. The trick is, don't get involved with those memories, just be content that they arise and say hello and, you know, let them drift down the river. But some of these memories can be quite pleasant. And for me, I had a variety of memories that arose. But at some point, I started remembering experiences of samadhi that I had as a kid. And so one of the first that came to mind was when I was, I don't know how old I was, maybe 9, 8, 9, 10 years old. I used to have this experience that I was so very content. That was a primary characteristic of it. I was very content and safe and cozy, going to bed at night with the covers over me. And at that time, I had I called it, I had to have a name for it, So I called it the edge of the pillow experience. Edge of the pillow experience, because I was had my head on the pillow. And it was just kind of feeling of well-being, that kind of, or not even well-being, a feeling of kind of rightness that kind of just kind of was there in my chest. A couple of years later, I had, then I remembered also another experience I had a couple of years when I was older, maybe 10 or 11, I was living in Italy, and I took the bus to school, public bus, and back and forth from home. And back then they had the bus driver and then the conductor, and the conductor's only job was to sell the tickets. And I lived kind of near the end of the bus line for going home, and so I discovered that if I sat in a particular seat on the bus, I would sit in the seat right behind where the conductor would sit when he would take out his ledger. He had this little notebook, and he would record how many tickets he'd sold on the last trip, like how many one-way tickets and round-trip tickets and kids' tickets and, you know, all the different categories. And he would write them down, his numbers in his book. And if I just looked over his shoulder, I just felt so good. I just would feel so contented, and so like everything was right in the world. And just kind of just, you know, looking at, I had no idea. I never thought about it. I was kind of like a little bit on probably an automatic pilot. I just discovered this thing. I didn't think about it much, but I just knew if I sat there, I'd feel good. And I didn't miss it. When I wasn't taking the bus anymore, I didn't remember it anymore. It wasn't like I was. And then when I started doing my first retreats, those memories came back of sitting there behind the conductor and what happened there. And I think what was going on was that as I got more settled and feel more present here in this experience, in the moment, that the feelings were similar to what I had watching the conductor. And so I kind of, the memories came back then. Another memory I had was that I associate very much with a certain kind of feeling of samadhi, was being even younger as a kid and taking the bed sheets and draping them over the kitchen table, and then making a little fort, you know, going inside, you know, underneath the kitchen table. And it felt so safe in there. And remember, I still remember, it was like daytime, and the light in there would be so nice, somehow clean, because of the white sheet, I guess, and sunlight or something, clean, white, kind of peaceful, still. Even if everything else was noisy in the house, it felt really still and quiet underneath that, you know, in my little fort. And so I associate that with samadhi as well. And so maybe for you, maybe there's something that is a reference point for you. It doesn't have to be dramatic, but maybe there's some time when you felt contented at home, at ease, kind of felt a sense of well-being, that you could maybe see associated with being composed or settled or being whole, being complete. Everything's okay. Not everyone has those experiences, but if you do have them, then sometimes they can be kind of, if you remember them briefly enough, it can kind of reopen those channels. And so when you sit to meditate, you kind of know those channels and know what those sensations in the body or something. And it's kind of like open or relax and like, oh, let those come. Let them, like, you know, as I settle, as I get composed, let me be here. And there is something about, I think, samadhi that not just about that involves letting go, but a kind of a willingness to allow the vitality of life or the energies of the body, make them space to let them emerge, let them flow. One of the examples that the similes the Buddha uses for concentration, for samadhi, is a underground, underwater spring, like a lake with a spring underwater from the base of the lake that comes up and sends refreshing water up into the lake water, the spout coming up. And so this idea that something emerges and arises from within and spreads out, opens up. So can you have, but what, you know, for that to be your body, to let something to emerge from your body, you can't be the one who's in control, controlling everything, or trying everything, or bearing down, or, you know, jerking your mind around. It's a lot about kind of dropping into your body and kind of softening and opening and allowing something to emerge. What can emerge there? What's there? Is there tenderness? Is there any feeling of flow or vibration or any feeling of even subtle well-being that can be there in the body? And can we soften and relax into it? Now samadhi is supported often by keeping the attention so simple that it's just mostly staying with one thing. So the attention is just staying with the breath, and really staying with the breath, not doing what's called the checklist approach to mindfulness. And the checklist approach is, you know, you're supposed to pay attention to the in-breath. So the in-breath begins, done that, check it off, and then you can just let the mind do what it wants to do until the out-breath happens. And then the out-breath, you know, check that off, and you know, right. You're very quickly as you can, and then you have time to think about something else. It's great. but to maintain the focus on one thing kind of continuously. So with the, if it's the breathing, for example, it's kind of like, I don't know if you know this, maybe I was told this, I took a massage class many, many years ago in college, and I was told that when you massage someone and you have to kind of go get more oil or something, never lose touch with their body. It's like put your hand, the back of your hand or something, or keep your hand, one hand on their body, and then get your oil and put it on put it in your hand, but never lose touch with them. Always stay in touch. And there's something valuable about the continuity of touch. It kind of keeps them relaxed, or I don't know what. So the same thing with our breathing. Don't lose touch. Stay there. So when you feel the in-breath, see if you can kind of feel the whole in-breath, as if it's a massage, as if it's a masseuse that's kind of touching you from the inside. And then the whole out-breath. And then, I recommend not to get caught up with that you have to do this forever. Like, now just stay there. Because one of the things that messes up samadhi is the idea that you're supposed to be kind of really fixated and not leave whatsoever. Everything has a rhythm. Everything should be done softly and fluidly. And so we try to stay with the breathing. And of course the mind will drift off. And you come back. Drift off, you come back. And each time you come back, you're kind of like maybe able to stay longer and longer. But you don't fight it. You know, you're trying to stay, but you don't fight going away. You come back and stay. Do this rhythm. Come back, stay there. And so sometimes it works very well to have serial concentration. So rather than committed to one breath all the time, you're committed to one for a little while, and then you're not monogamous, but you're serially committed. You know, so you do the concentration a little bit, and then you can't do it, and then you do it again, you know, to the next partner that comes along. And the next one, you know, next breath, whatever, you know. And somehow that kind of thinking of it that more that way, rather than this, it's completely committed, it's not unwavering. Sometimes it's too high of a expectation that just is bothersome to have that kind of expectation. So there's this kind of brief samadhi. Just brief. I'm just going to briefly here for now, for what I can, and then I'll do it again for what I can, and not just but this idea of being present in a receptive way, an open way, receiving the experience, being with it. So samadhi I associate more with poetry. And so if, I don't know if any of you are poets or artists or musicians or something, or do some kind of creative outlet. But maybe there's something about doing those things that, you know, sometimes some people, actually someone showed me today a poem that he wrote that just suddenly appeared and he had to write it down. Just there it was. So where does it, where, you know, this thing that, these things that can emerge and arise. What are the conditions that support the emerging of the muse, the emerging of samadhi, of subtleness, emerging of this healing energy that helps us become whole, feel whole or unified? And one of the conditions is be simple, especially on retreat. Try to simplify your time here so you're not doing a lot of different things. Keep things simple and stay close to yourself. Be intimate with yourself. Stay in your little bubble of awareness. Just stay here. So you're not easily end up thinking about all kinds of different things and reminded of different things. Just stay here. Stay here. So, for example, it could be like if you go down to the end of the gate there and you're looking at the cars going up and down Glen Canyon. Well, you might see some car that you think should be your next car, and then you're planning how to get a loan and what color you're going to get. And it takes you, a few days to get off that boat. Don't go down to the gate and look at cars. Keep it simple, don't get a lot of new input. Stay quiet. Stay quiet. Continuity. In a loving, tender, forgiving way, stay in the flow of the practice throughout the day, the best you can. Don't take big breaks. So when you get up from the walking practice, someone said to me, Brian or Susie, that don't take that as a break. Take that as a whole different way to practice the samadhi of walking down the steps. The sensuousness, the warmth, the tenderness of really being there, walking down the steps. The samadhi of standing in a meal line. You could be, it could be all kinds of interesting things to do in a line. You can look at people's socks and evaluate them. You can calculate, how much food is left and whether there's going to be enough for you. And all kinds of, or you can stay close to your, samadhi bubble. Kind of stay in and kind of stay close and intimate and warm and cozy, like you're underneath your kitchen table with a sheet over it. Stay close. Stay close. Stay here. Be very forgiving, very generous, very compassionate and caring, and very respectful of yourself. It's good to be very kind and without a lot of expectations or demands or forcefulness. And a lot of willingness to just stand on the dry riverbank the best you can and notice what boats you were in, or maybe that's something very grown up, very mature about standing on mindfulness, standing in presence and stability and uprightness and alertness and really seeing what's there, being here for this reality, for yourself. And what happens slowly over time is that this grown-up quality of alertness or maturity or uprightness or being here in a strong way becomes more important or more valuable or more a reference point than other things that have been reference point for your happiness, whether people like you or not, or whether you get what you want, or what your bank account is, or all kinds of things, that this is a kind of inner wealth. This is a place of strength. This is a place of, it's worth being. This is your wonderful maybe dry ground underneath the oak tree in a wonderful, peaceful place, so that you feel at home wherever you go, because your home is here. You feel at home here, in this place, this time. So let's do it. It's going to take a couple of minutes here to settle back in into your meditation posture, and so that as we come to the end of this little talk period, you bring yourself back in association with a physical posture and physical way of being that is connected to being present, being here, being alert.